So today it's my great honor to introduce Diming Chen as our speaker. He's a professor at the Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering at University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. And I know him in the context of reconfigurable computing and GPUs. He's done work in high-level synthesis, computational genomics, and today he's here to talk about machine learning on heterogeneous computing. So, please.
So, thank you very much, Ken. So, it's my great pleasure to share with you guys some of our recent research activities and results, right? So I'm a big fan of Microsoft. I'm a big fan of Bill Gates, actually. So, you know, actually, this is also a good dream coming true for me, okay? The good thing is, you know, one of my PhD students, Si Tao, is sitting in the audience, and, right, he's a summer intern here, right? So things all connected very well. Okay, so the title of my talk is Cognitive Computing on Heterogeneous Hardware Systems for the AI Revolution, okay? So, of course, we have been working on heterogeneous computing, FPGA, GPU, like what Ken introduced. However, the AI thing is pretty recent. I became quite interested with artificial intelligence in general, and then also since last year, we have a center on cognitive computing in Illinois, right? Mainly sponsored by IBM, and they basically also donate quite some hardware, right? So we're working on, you know, across the whole stack, right? Algorithms, accelerations, applications. So then, you know, actually one of my focused effort these days is in AI and the FPGA acceleration of the AI workloads. Okay, so then people may wonder why AI and why now, right? So I summarize it with several kind of aspects, right? The first of all, we have the big data, right? Every day, large and unstructured data flood us, right? From Facebook, from Google, you know, social media, right? And then as a result, suddenly you have a huge amount of data that you can use to train, right? So for Facebook, you have so many labeled faces, right? Then naturally, you can use those as a raw material to train for machine intelligence, let's say for facial recognition, right? For Google, so many different countries are using it, right? Then suddenly you have so much raw material, just try for machine translation, right? So, you know, the data really for artificial intelligence is the driving force behind it. And then next, so we have all this data, and in the same time, we also have cloud computing, right, emerging as one of the affordable computing platform for us. So we do not need to have like, 500 nodes in our backyard, right, in order to run the heavy workload, right, as long as we can access, for example, to Microsoft Cloud, to Amazon Cloud, right, and we are able to generate some really meaningful results already. And in the same time, right, so the deep neural network become really kind of revived, right, and starting about 5-6 years ago, right. So at the beginning, people still have some doubts, right, because neural network has been around for a long time, right. So what's new for this round? And then later on, many people convinced, right? So actually, this thing is quite natural because it's imitating how people, how little children are learning, right? And so based on the images, based on speeches, right, deep neural network is able to recognize the intrinsic features specific, right, to the image or speech or language. And so that's why it can improve the overall accuracy, right? And then finally, we have hardware advances, right, such as GPU, FPGA, or even dedicated ASIC TPU, right? So now Google is talking about TPU 2, right? So then what does it mean with all these things? So then naturally, right, so people are thinking or advocating that AI is the next round of industry revolution, right? So we have maybe every 30 years, you have one revolution, right? Our current revolution is information technology, right? So what's the next one, right? So many people believe AI, right, will be the one that will permeate our daily lives, right? So if you think about all kinds of applications, right, ranging from insurance, flaw detection, artificial limbs, and all these things, right? Eventually, right, boil down with data analytics, right, boiling down with some computing platform so you can provide real-time analysis results that you can use to make some decisions, right? Eventually, our hope is artificial intelligence can help human being, right, in different all kinds of aspects to improve our daily lives. Okay, so on top of this, there's another segment, right? This so-called IoT, Internet of Things, right? So which is emerging and also evolving very fast. Okay, so people are talking about smart city, smart home, smart manufacturing, wearable devices, etc., etc. So they are like the sensors or the failures, right? You know, spread out in the world. And then they collect all the data. And then at the back end, we have the cloud computing, right? So we may have some machine learning workload running in the cloud computing that supply the intelligence for the sensors, right? So overall, you can imagine, indeed, in the near future, we can evaluate and we can face a brand new kind of industry that can help us in different aspects. Okay, so then let's focus on one type of industry, emerging industry, is so-called cognitive computing. Okay, so then what is cognitive computing? Okay, so I don't know whether you guys heard about this term before. So anybody heard about this term before? This is, okay, all right, and. So there's no widely agreed upon definition for cognitive computing yet. Okay. Usually, it means the computing system that mimics the functioning of the human brain and helps to improve human decision making. Okay. So this one focuses on the interaction between machine and human. Why? So this is one definition from IBM. Systems that learn at scale, reason with purpose, and interact with humans naturally. Okay. So then cognitive computing can learn from rich data, right? So we just talk about big data, right? Reason from models, we need to build some models. Okay. And then most importantly, interact with us to perform complex tasks better than either humans or machines can do by themselves. So then the goal is to basically make 1 plus 1 greater than 2. Okay, so that's the goal here. And then you realize, oh, okay, so then naturally it will cover a bunch of different things, right? So then here I list the different stacks for the cognitive computing, right? On the top, we have the cognitive application solutions, right? Actually, it's pretty broad, right? If we try to follow that definition, right? So then ranges from autonomous vehicle, right? Virtual reality, personal healthcare, chatbot, right? So all these devices, right? You can treat them as devices, large and small, all interacting with people, right? And then there's this middleware services or libraries from IBM, from Amazon, from Microsoft, right? Azure. From Google, et cetera, et cetera. And then also underneath, we have heterogeneous infrastructures offered from hardware companies, mainly from hardware companies, but people leveraging this hardware and building different kind of frameworks, right, to really make people's life or people's dream come true, right? And on the other hand, there are also some consortium that's coming, right? For example, OpenCAPI is like an open consortium pushed by Microsoft, right? Their goal is to make microprocessor easily accessible to different type of accelerators, whether it's GPU or FPGA. As long as they talk the common interface, right, then they can be put together. And then you can also access to some heterogeneous IOs or different kind of memories, right? So basically try to build a community in order to build the hardware system, right, easily, right? And then support all these different stack of, either from application point of view or firmware point of view, right, make the whole stack work. Okay, so then for cognitive computing acceleration, so this is a part of my specialty, it's also very fun to work with because I can deal with both software and hardware, right? So we as engineers, and sometimes we want to really make the whole system work, right? So then this includes several aspects, right? So we have been working on. So the first one is open source, a set of cognitive workload benchmarks. This can include IRCN, right? So actually I have more results in terms of IRCN. We make the whole IRCN work. And then AlexNet, LSTM, right? ResNet. ResNet is developed by Microsoft, right? So it actually won the ImageNet competition a couple of years ago, right? Then GoogleNet. And then a complete workflow that can start from TensorFlow, right? Offer from Google. And then people use that to develop deep neural network type of models. And then we can try to build an open source flow, take that model and map to FPGA, right? And then on top of that, we can work on the benchmarks, right? And then try to map to FPGA, try to map to GPU, compare them, or when you have a workload coming in, how can we quickly analyze it and then see which type of hardware platform is most suitable for this benchmark, right? And then eventually, after we get some OpenCAPI machines, we also want to map out these benchmarks there. Okay. So then the third item here is to develop a principled methodology for acceleration. Okay. So our main driving force is high-level senses. Okay. So high-level senses is it's not a new idea. However, it really started to kind of catch real serious traction since about 6-7 years ago. And right now, the main FPGA companies are using this very heavily, right? Both Xilinx and Altera Intel. Okay, so with the high-level senses as the driving force, and then we can enable hardware software partitioning for heterogeneous systems, some new work that we did, right? So I'm going to share. So for the high-level senses part and hardware software part, I'm going to share with the audience for our recent new results. And we also start to work on near memory acceleration, I don't think I have time to share about this one today. Okay. So then let's take a look at this case study, right? It's called long-term recurrent convolutional network. Okay. So it's a video recognition and description architecture. So it consists of AlexNet. Okay. So it's a deep neural network that's good to recognize all kinds of objects in the image. And then it's driving a LSTM, right, long short-term memory. And then it's also a neural network. It's a recurrent neural network. It has some memory. So then it's pretty good to analyze the logic, right? Actually, it's pretty popular in the speech recognition and things like that. And then put all together, then what we can do is we can shoot real-time video, okay? And then analyze the image and then output the description of that image, right? So then this become like a video content kind of analyzer, right? So suppose you have a UAV, right? So just give you one application. You have a UAV that's flying, right? Then you can recognize the scene, right? And then based on that, you can make some decisions, okay? So what we want to do is we want to take the high-level census approach to map the RRCN to FPGA, okay? So if you haven't heard about high-level census, this is a typical design flow, right? So the goal is we have so many more software engineers than hardware engineers, right? Not everyone is pretty familiar with the hardware language, okay? So, but many people are working with high-level language such as C++. So then what we do is we'll use C++ to describe the algorithm, right? To describe your application, and then we will generate the hardware for you, okay? So this itself is like an AI process because it's trying to imitate the hardware engineer to write the hardware, right? So then, yeah, C++, they may not be synthesizable, meaning that not every C++ code can be translated into hardware, right? For example, if you have dynamic memory allocation, that the CPU can handle, but FPGA cannot really handle. It doesn't really understand how do you dynamically allocate, memory. Or if you have, a command writing bunch of text to a file, FPGA doesn't understand that either because it doesn't really have an operating system. It's a piece of hardware supposed to accelerate some computation for you, right? Okay, so then. Fine, let's say we make sure all the code is synthesizable, then make sure the C-level code, verified and, everything's fine. Then go through the high-level census. Right here, we can handle, mainly trying to handle the parallelization well, because the reason I want to map this thing to FPGA is try to get some acceleration, right? Then so people reported sometimes hundreds of acceleration, hundreds times faster, right? So I'll show some results later. And so how do we deal with all these things, right? So functions, loops, arrays, and trade-off, right? So these are the building blocks for the FPGA. And then one important thing is how do we make sure the computation memory can be handled well, right? So the memory part will not become a bottleneck. Okay, so here is an example, right? So let's say you are shooting the video, right? So here this image, at the end, the RRCN should output something like this, a group of young men playing a game of soccer, okay? All right, so then we analyze some complexity, right? So altogether, this actually is a large network, right? So people usually use a number of parameters, right? So number of weights, right, to evaluate how large the neural network is. And then, so 86 million weight data is actually pretty large, okay? And then we have about 2.2 gig operations per second, right? That's the requirement. And then you have this amount of data, right? So then the FPGA on-chip memory is not large enough to hold all this data. So then we have to make sure the data can be streamlined into the FPGA, right, in such order, right? So then you can have high effective memory bandwidth, okay? And so we did some analysis. So this is basically for which layer, what's the number of bits and things like that. And then we also analyzed for different type of layers, convolutional, fully connected, RNN, right? These are the most major ones. What's the ratio between computation and memory? And then we try to deal with them with different strategies. For example, for the fully connected, you don't have a lot of computation. However, you have a lot of memory requirement, right? So then for these ones, what do we do to make sure the data can be effectively fat to the IPGA, right, or shared, right, to minimize the overall latency. By the way, if you have questions, please feel free to stop me. I think we have enough time to discuss some details, okay? And then some other challenges, right? So unclear allocation scheme and partitioning and tiling factors. So this is our goal is to have high parallelization. So we want to map all the layers to FPGA, right? And then we can do pipelining, right? So then in such a way, all the resources will be busy all the time. However, because the different characteristics of the layers, so how do we really allocate resource? You have limited resource. The IPGA has a limited size, right? So all those different type of lots and all that, right? So how do we allocate them? And then in such a way, given the limit, we can maximize the overall performance, right? So then that's one of the challenges. And we actually developed some theory behind it to guide it. And then in terms of limited on-chip memory and memory access bandwidth, we actually come up with some prefetching, right? So if you work with a computer architecture, that's a familiar concept, but we use it for FPGA, right? And then we also do some data layout optimization, right? So make sure we really can feed the data very efficiently to the hardware. Okay, so then let's take a look at resource allocation. So we developed some theory and we call it the resource allocation management. This is a realm, right? So what we do is we analyze resource allocation among the layers and determine the most efficient allocation to minimize total network latency given limitations in FPGA resource. And then, so here is a simple model, right? So you have many layers, right? So let's say computation demand of layer I is Ci. Resource consumed by that layer is Ri, okay? So then the total latency is basically Ci divided by Ri, summing over all the layers. Of course, this we are making some assumption. We are basically, the assumption is memory is not a bottleneck, right? So then if you have more computation, it runs faster. If you have more, if it has more computation, then, you know, with a fixed resource, it will take longer. But if you have can allocate more resource, then the computation overall time will be minimized, assuming you have all the data, right? So then in order to make this true, indeed, those tricks to make data available to the accelerator all the time need to be realized, right, in order for this resource, for the realm to work. But let's see, that's the case. And then we go through some, you know, this is a Cauchy inequality, right? And then eventually what we get is, here's the guideline, okay? So the resource allocation for the different layers should be kind of proportional to the ratio of the square root of the computation need, okay? So then we actually evaluated this, and so just a simple evaluation, let's say we take two layers as example, right? So just two layers in a deep neural network. Let's say the computation requirement is 1 to 2. And then if we do the realm, right, do the square root, and then find out, okay, you should allocate about 41% resource to layer one and 58% resource to layer two, okay? So then we actually go through a bunch of logic senses, and because this this is pretty high level, right, guidance. And then we go through a bunch of resource, you know, logic senses and evaluate. And indeed, we find out our resource allocation. So this one is about 41%. This one about 58%. And they match with the best solution for both layers. Okay? All right. So then that's one technique we developed, right? So try to guide the resource allocation. And in the same time, The goal of high-level sensors, probably you already know, is to improve design productivity, right? So people can just write C code, C++ code, right? And they do not need to deal with the low-level hardware description. And then the high-level sensors engine will generate hardware for you. So then another technique is intellectual property, right? So then we'll naturally think about, can we develop some high-level sensors IPs for machine learning, right? So because, you know, machine learning, they are mainly dealing with several typical type of layers, right? The structure is pretty regular, right? And then looks like we can develop some IPs. So these are the high-level IPs that can be reused across the different layers, right? So actually, both convolutional layer and the fully connected layer can be translated into matrix multiplication, right? So then we can develop some IPs that's doing MAC operation, and then share them across different layers. So that's what we did. So then, so for this one, right? So we actually developed some adder tree. You have some multiplication adder tree. We even put pipelining. So for the IP, it's a pipeline IP. Okay, so then it can definitely help on the throughput. And then of course the adder tree gave you a logarithmic reduction, right, in terms of overall latency, right? And then we can reuse these different IPs for the machine learning layers. For example, this is a convolutional layer. It has input, it has 48 channels. Output, it has 128 channels, right? So it has, so the filter size is 5x5, and the feature map is 27x27. But then we can see, we can partition it, right, in a tiled fashion. And then we can just instantiate this IP many times, right? So then we can improve the parallelization. In the same time, it's pretty flexible, right? So it really depends on what's the computation need for this particular layer, right? Because the size are different. And then we can instantiate, right, how many of the IPs, and right, and weave them together, and then deliver the optimized solution. Okay, so then there are some other techniques. I don't have time to go into the details. We also try the network pruning, right? And so we prune the network, and then we do retraining. I have about 1% accuracy loss. However, we reduce actually a lot. Then and now the weight really got reduced, right? So then it can help us to speed up the overall system, and then it will definitely mitigate the memory issues. Okay, and then we also use a fixed point, right? So instead of floating point, the fixed point can really help us in terms of overall storage and performance. And then in terms of specific memory handling, we use the FIFO for weight prefetch, right? Because the pattern is kind of predictable. We can analyze them and prefetch the data. And then we also use this ping pong buffer. So let's say between two layers, we have two buffer, right? So this is a so-called ping pong buffer. Well, so then we can also allocate more VRAM. So while you are executing on one VRAM, the other buffer is grabbing data to feed the other VRAM, right? And then you swap, right? So then this can effectively hide the memory latency. So then it can also make the resource allocation scheme work for us. Okay. All right, so this is our system. So we have a front end, it has a webcam, okay, and then goes to a TK1. So, you know, because we just have the TK1, and so we just use it for some pre-processing, it doesn't need to be a TK1. Actually, TK1 is an overkill, but it's available. So what we do is, the webcam is 1080p, right? So then we downsample it, right, to feed into this FPGA, because AlexNet actually work with like a 244 by 244 type of image, okay? So then we have the FPGA in a different room, and then the, all the frames send over the internet. We have power meter and everything. And so here is the final results. Okay, so we evaluate. So this, we use Vertex 7, okay, and then evaluate against NVIDIA K80. So actually, they are using the same LISO, right? So similar amount of transistors, okay. And then we also compare to a high-end Intel CPU. So then overall, for a single image latency, right? So our latency is 0.04. So then that means it can handle 25 frames per second, right? So this is really close to real time. However, for NVIDIA, it takes 0.124 second. So we actually have about 3x speed up over the GPU. Okay, and then for the Intel, so for this one, it has a large cache, and we did a lot of optimization, and then our speed up is about 4.75x. So Intel, this is the power of Intel. That's power. So everything is measured. So overall, we have about 18x lower energy compared to both GPU and the CPU, right? So so then the idea is, let's say indeed we have the FPGAs in the cloud, right? Just like those FPGAs used in the Bing search engine, right? So eventually, let's say FPGA can be made available to the customers, right? So then the question is, how do you really program the FPGA in order to get this kind of good results? Right, so for us, we take several months, you know, some students and try this and try that. Of course, we need to, invent something like the Realm and like the memory layout and all that. So then later on, how can we port this to a kind of a production, right? So then the users of the cloud can get access to this, work with their own workload and map to the FPGA and gain the similar speed up, right? So then that's the goal. So I think we definitely have some good opportunity to really collaborate and maybe Sitao can work on something like this. All right? Okay, so any questions so far before I switch gear? All right, okay. So now let me switch gear and talk about the system on chip. Although this is a system on chip, but actually this framework, the overall methodology, is can be used for designing of general heterogeneous computing systems, right? Let me motivate the whole work by this SoC design, right? So complexity. So first of all, we have the complexity. Right, that's skyrocketing, right? So just by the number of IPs used per design, right? And then also the cost of the high-end SoC, okay? So then because of all this, we have to come up with some solutions. So this $164 million, it's not just the manufacturing cost. A lot of that cost come from the design, come from the verification, right? So this is basically the main power and behind the design cost, right? So then people proposed all kinds of solutions, right? Virtual platform, right? For hardware software co-design, system C, right? With TLM 2.0, Hello Senses, firmware verification, IP reuse, and all that. However, a lot of these things are kind of point solutions. So then our goal is how to combine all these and come up with a holistic solution, right, to target basically the design complexity of high-end SoCs. Okay, so let's review the hardware software co-design process, right? So these days, a lot of for very complicated SoC design, it's almost always started with high-level language these days, right? So it's a C, C++. And then, the designer, system designer, software designer, right, talk to the marketing people, right? So they come up with this C code or C++ code that's treated as the golden model, right? So that's the execution specification, right? So you can just run this code and you know, you can even run with the real test vectors and generate the outputs, right? You go through software type of debugging and everything, and then people are happy with this. Okay, that's the gold model. But then how do you start from here and then eventually come out with SoC to implement the same thing, right? So then we have the CPU side, we have the accelerator side, right? And then the question is which parts of the application should go to hardware and which part go to the software, right? So then that's why we have this hardware-software partitioning, right? A lot of times people just do profiling and then manually partition it, right? That's still the current kind of way to do it. However, you know, if you do not, because you know, when it's complicated, you know, we just mentioned you can have even IPs, you can have hundreds of them. Right, so large design space, and if you have bad decision, then you end up with high communication costs, complicated dependency, etc., etc. So how do we really automate? How do we really improve? Right. So it's an old topic. However, people tried, and I haven't really seen very successful projects that actually moved into the real commercial product, right? So the system level tools these days are still really falling behind, right? So this is a new effort by us, and we want to, because we can build some interesting model, high-level model work targeting both software and hardware, right? Especially for the hardware that's enabled through high-level sensors, because high-level sensors can quickly evaluate the overall design space, and then we are able to build a system-level model and then target the large design space, right? So let me share with you the most recent results we did. So here, to automate the hardware-software co-design, we need at least these several actions, items, right? Consider different hardware and software implementations of each code region for acceleration, right? And even for software, you can have different implementations. Would it be like x86, or would it be a quad core from ARM? Right, so it definitely have different performance and power. How do you really quickly model that? Okay, so then for hardware, of course, the design space is even more broad. So I will show you some results to explain why that's the case. And then after that, we need to accurately model the entire system and all its components. Right, so. And after you have a good model, then you can use the model to guide your event space exploration, right? So if that's the case, then immediately we need to ask all these different questions, okay? And then our contribution is an automated software hardware partitioning framework by tackling these three challenges. So what do we do? We have high-level accurate hardware software modeling, task graph generation algorithm to capture key features of the system, and randomized ILP algorithm to explore the design space efficiently. Okay, so let me see my time. Okay, so this is a simple kind of overview about hardware software co-design, right? So you start with the back, right? Hardware software partitioning, and then software, then hardware, right? So then if that's the case, let's just take a divide and conquer approach. Let's do the mainly three part. We'll focus on this part and that part, right? So let's do the software modeling first. Okay. So so I don't know. So do you guys mainly work on software or hardware? Who mainly work on software? Oh, sweet. And the rest is working on hardware? Okay, all right, great. So then hopefully, for the software people, you can learn about something about hardware and vice versa, right? And but then hardware software co-design naturally means, okay, you have to do both, right? And then design, right? Co-design, okay. So then goal for the software, automatic software modeling framework with desired features. You may wonder, hey, software modeling, what's new about this, right? So many people worked on it. But our main goal is we try to use this to do hardware software co-design, which can be, you know, there's a large dense space. So our main goal is to speed up, right? So speed hundreds of speed up without too much loss of the accuracy. That's the motivation, okay? So let's look at the software modeling, right? So so we actually target the loops, okay? Because this is a 10-90 rule, right? So 90% of the execution time is spent on 10% of the source code, right? So you have to understand the loops very well because they just they become very computation intensive. So what we do is we use this so-called regions of interest idea. So let's say you have these loops. Right, what we do is we partition them into M regions of interest, right? So then immediately you can think about this. If I can model each of these regions in parallel, right? So then I have a MX speed up, right? So that's a very trivial observation. So then how do we do it? So then what we do is we can actually do fast forward. Right? So then let's see, we have M threads, and we throw each of these regions to one thread. But when you do the modeling or simulation, right? So this we actually use simulation-based, and then we'll do fast forward, right? So we always start from the beginning, do fast forward, and so that many simulators, they have this fast forward feature, and then we can generate condition, right? So this is a precondition for this region of interest, right? So for example, the state of the cache and all those are very important for you to accurately model these different regions. So then you can do that. So but then at most, you have MX speed up. How do we achieve hundreds of speed up, right? So that's the question. So what we do is, actually, we observe that many applications have different phases, right? So for example, for this correlation, this one, right? So because of a branch mispredication, cache misses, structure hazard, and things like that, you know. So then we can actually model these phases using piecewise linear strategy. And then if that's the case, let's say we take this out, and then we really do not need to estimate the, you know, using the ROI to estimate the whole thing here. As long as we can estimate the performance here and there, right? And the rest can be just accurately modeled, right? So now the question is, how do we identify these different phases to really reduce the number of simulation points, right? So in the paper, we have quite some details, and so due to the time limit, I will not go into all the details. But let's say we did it, and we did it perfectly, and then what will be the final results? You know, I'll skip this part. This is mainly trying to make sure, because we are doing software hardware co-design, right? So eventually, we'll want to enable virtual platform, right? Where you have software and hardware, how do they talk to each other? They use system C, right? So what we do is we have the software model. After the model, we can generate some system C wrappers, right? So it can generate for both the computation component and the memory, and just using the system C TLM 2.0. And so then we can enable high-level hardware software co-design simulator, right? So that can be used as our kind of a ground truth evaluation. Oh, okay, sorry. So then let's look at the overall speed up. So we evaluate our solution against both Gen 5 and Sniper, right? So these are the two popular kind of software modeling simulators. And then we gain indeed hundreds of speed up, especially a lot of speed up against Gen 5. So, and then our average latency and energy error is very well controlled. Right? So then this indeed can be used as a building block for system level modeling, right? At least for the software side. Okay, so then let's move on. Let's talk about hardware modeling. Right, so we talk about software, let's move on to the hardware side. So what's the challenge on hardware? Okay, so the goal is to develop automatic hardware modeling framework with desired features, right? So then let's look at the hardware models. So what are the challenges? First of all, how to actually model performance and power early on, right? So if you have a high level representation, that's actually quite difficult because you have no gate level physical information available. Secondly, how to automate system design process, right? So let's take a look at this typical system level design process, right? I kind of explained it before. And you start with C, C++, right? Hardware software partitioning. And then people usually do this virtual platform, right? Because it's SoC. Right, you have all kinds of IPs and bus systems, and right. So model it, make sure the overall functionality is correct, right? So then after the model, then you have some options, because you do the system C modeling. This system C may not be even synthesizable for Hello Senses, right? Although it's a C++ code, and then you have to either re-implement using synthesizable system C, or you write everything again using RTL, right? So this whole flow is very real. That's what people are fighting every day, okay? So then if you look at this, all kinds of manual thing, right? So we talk about, okay, hardware software code design is manually done, and then this is manually done, right? That's manually done. The overall is a very slow process. That's why you have $164 million, right, to really make this work. So what's the third challenge? How to explore the large database? Let's say even you did all this, but then you are RTL designer, you're just implementing one type of architecture, right? So, you know, that's why they, it's a sleepless in Seattle, is that right? So, why? Because they realize maybe there's a better design out there and I cannot do it, right? With the limited time and manpower, okay? So it's a huge design space, how to find optimal implementation. That's the next big challenge. So how do we really solve all this, right? So actually, our approach directly tackles these three problems, okay? So, you know, system C generation, modeling, and design space exploration. How do we do it? So the first one, we'll use polyhedron-based power and latency calculation and estimation. So I'll explain this in detail pretty soon. And automatic system C generation and analytical power and latency modeling. Okay. And then the third, fast accelerator design space exploration. Okay, so let me explain some details. So here is the high-level view. For our accelerator system C generation and design space exploration flow. Okay, we should really come up with a cool name to capture all this. Maybe we should write a journal paper or something, right? And so how do we, so for the first one is automated C to system C transformation. So, I explained that people use system C and it may not be synthesizable and all that. So fine, so then we'll generate system C code. Then we have full control. Then, you know, systems, we generate synthesizable system C code, right, for you, okay? Then we can run Hello Senses on top of that. So the better thing is after that, we can characterize, right? So because we use polyhedron model, it have very powerful analyzing kind of capability. We can actually characterize one tile of the whole loop, and then use that tile as a building block to characterize the performance and the power. And then based on that, we can come up with an analytical power and latency model and then use that to drive a fast design space explorer. Okay, so it's actually each stage is enable the next stage, right? So as I mentioned here, if I can just characterize one tile, then it's one design space, and then we can expand that into entire design space, and then generate the performance power Pareto curve based on our fast design space exploration. Okay, so then skip all the details, and so let's look at some results. So here, so blue dots form the design space, right? So this is a real benchmark. So this is going through, kind of exhaustively going through the design space, and right, and then measure it, right, run detailed simulation. And this one is based on our model, right? So the model I just explained. And you can see actually they're pretty close, and especially on the frontier, the Pareto curve, they pretty much match, right? Latency, power, so there's such an error, right? But it's controlled, right? It's similar to the software modeling error we saw. So then this can actually have quite some advantage. So let's say for this benchmark, right? So this benchmark is a communication dominated, you just by evaluating this, right? So then that's why if you compare these 2 points, for this one, I throw in a lot of resource. That's why you have much higher power. However, the latency is not reduced too much because it's a memory dominated. Right, so then if that's the case, if I'm willing to suffer 4% latency, right, longer latency, and then I can reduce power by 70% already, right? So then for this one, if it's a kind of a computation-dominated design, then you can do effective kind of power latency trade-off. So now we have the model for the software, and we have the model for the hardware, and then we can really do the co-design, right? So we have the building blocks done. So then this is actually the latest work is going to appear at DAC 17. So what we do is we use the LLVM, right? So you're probably familiar with this compiler framework developed by a faculty member from the CS, Department of UIUC. What we do is we identify some hot regions, right? So this is basically we actually also evaluate some real workload, and then we can evaluate the branch probability, right? So you have the control flow, you have the data flow. So certain paths can be activated much more, right? So then we put down more weights for those. But then we extract the parallelism, you know, based on the branching and all that. So then we create a graph, right? So this graph is in the middle between the conventional task graph and the LLVM. So LLVM IR is the operation level, and conventional task graph, and you know, those are more coarse-grained. But then we have something in the middle, so then that can dramatically reduce the complexity for the ILP. So how does this work? So we identify how the regions, those are the candidates to be mapped to the hardware side. Okay, so then to really reduce the design space for this region, you know, we can do software modeling, we can do hardware modeling, right? And then we combine and we have a common Pareto curve. That's the trade-off across the entire design space between software. Let's say software, you know, it's 1 core, 2 core. Or hardware, the hardware I just show you, there's a curve there even, right? So you have this whole thing captured here. However, how do we do ILP? What we do is we do some sampling and then annotate all these samples into each of these nodes, right? Each node has a different Pareto curve. Do the sampling, do the annotation, and then we can do the ILP formulation and solve it. After we solve it, then each node will have one solution for us, right? Whether it's a software, whether it's hardware. If it's a hardware, what's the trade-off there, right? And then what we do is we want to find the next level, more fine-grained solution. So then we actually zoom in, and then this is called design space localization. We zoom in here and do resampling, okay? So then after that, right, so we can go through several iterations until we complete the whole design, right? So then we can provide very fine-grained solution, but then reduce the design space search. Okay, so then let's look at the results for this one, right? So so this is the entire result, right? So we have the software modeling, hardware modeling, system level modeling, and then we can automate the software, hardware, software co-design. So then let's compare to some traditional kind of solutions such as Simunity Kneeling, okay? Because you have a large design space, a lot of time people use Simunity Kneeling. And in general, we are 53x faster than Simunity Kneeling. And then for covariance, both algorithms found the same results, while for the other benchmarks, our result outperformed Simunity Kneeling. Okay, so this is from performance point of view. And then here, we then also compare the optimality, right? So for these three benchmarks, they are relatively small. So what we did is we did an exhaustive search in order to find the optimal solution. And then for all these three, when we have the exhaustive solution, we all match the optimal solution. For the rest, the optimal solution just take too long, cannot get it. So that's why we only reported our solution. And in the same time, we have this high-level model, right? And then we compare the model with FPGA synthesis results. So FPGA goes through placement routing, and then on average, the error, everything is about this, right? So this is a well-controlled because you can see the software side, the hardware side, our modeling error is at the similar category, right? So then overall, the error is well-controlled. So then what we did is, this is automated solution, and then we map to the FPGA, right? So that FPGA can be used as a prototyping tool for the actual SoC, and then we compare with the CPU, right, across a bunch of benchmarks, including AlexNet. So when it's bigger, actually, we have a better result, and overall, we have about 84.7x speed up. So this is the SoC on top of FPGA that has this speed up against to the CPU results. Any questions? Yes.
I'm just curious about what the power usage of the CPU was in comparison, because I don't see it.
Oh, yeah. The CPU, I think it's roughly 80 to 90 watts. Yeah.
Sounds right.
Right. Okay. So then let me quickly go through. I'm almost done. So it's 2:33. So I guess I can have 5-6 minutes. Okay. Yeah. So actually, I don't know whether you guys heard about FCUDA, right? So this is, if you love GPU, this is trying to work with GPU, right? So you can see, right, GPUs, FPGAs, they are all accelerators, right? In general, people think GPU is easier for programming, right? Especially after CUDA is out. You know, you use CUDA and you can program for all kinds of different type of GPUs, right? But for FPGA, it may not be the case. If you write a very long code for that Linux, you may not port that to Altera, right? I don't know whether you tried it or not. It's a lot of trouble. Or you write very long code for one type of Altera FPGA, and you want to port it to another type of Altera FPGA, it's not that portable either, right? So this can be quite troublesome, and it can become a barrier for FPGA, right? So that's also an advantage of HeloSynthesis. If we write the higher level code, mainly focusing on the behavior and algorithm, and then let the HeloSynthesis to determine all the little I/O and all those little things for you, right? Then you become more portable, okay? So for this one, what we do is, let's see how can we improve the overall FPGA programmability, right? So then our motivation is, okay, well, you have the C++ code together with CUDA, right? So when you write the CUDA code, you do have the host side, and then you have the device side, right? The device side is the CUDA code. And then
there are so much CUDA code. Okay, so then what if I can build a flow from CUDA to IPGA, right? And then I can compare my IPGA solution with this GPU solution and see whether I can have comparable results with lower power or lower energy, right? If that's the case, if I have a heterogeneous computing, let's say in the cloud, you have both GPU and IPGA, right? The users do not really care which one you use as long as you give me good results, right? So then people can just write CUDA code because this is still the dominating language for GPU. It's just because NVIDIA just dominate the market, right? So then you can just write a common CUDA code and it's up to me to make the decision for you to either map to GPU or IPGA, right? So you don't need to write another piece of code to specifically target IPGA, right? So you can see this can really help us to make sure we can, first of all, minimize the design time, right? So you do not do replicate work. Second of all, it can really facilitate this kind of design space analysis and or based on the characteristic of a workload and really map to the right platform, right, for the maximal gain in terms of energy efficiency and the performance right, improvement. So as a result, we actually built FCUDA. So this started about 9 years ago, okay, and about 15 people involved. And along the way, we also won some awards, and right. And the goal is right. So you have the CUDA code, and then we have some pragmas, some simple pragmas, to tell the Hilo synthesis which part is for communication, which part is for computation, and then we do this transformation, this FCUDA transformation, and then generate sensible C code, and then go through Hilo synthesis become a backend tool for us, and then general RTL. And this become open source, right? So if you are interested to play with it. And then we actually build NOC, so NOC with FCUDA cores and a hierarchical bus that can support hundreds of FCUDA cores, right? So then you can study different architecture even, you know, like a multi-core, many-core architecture. You can use this to study it, map to the IPGA, and then just do architecture evaluation that way, right? Okay, so finally, like 2 minutes. So what's in the future, right? So we propose an idea called Mega Brain, right? So it's actually also inspired with the Catapult project, right? I was chatting with a couple of researchers in the Catapult project. And then, so the Earth Scale, so Catapult really is an Earth Scale IPGA network, right? So, but can we use it and leverage that as human brain, right? So human brain has 100 billion neurons, average of 7,000 synaptic connections each. So if you compare with IBM True North chip, right, has 5 billion transistors, but you only have 1 million neurons and 256 million connections. So just from like a pure computation capacity, how many thousands of True North can really match this capacity, right? So looks like we really need a Earth-scale IPGA network, something like a Catapult or Catapult V2, if we want to do something like a brain, right? So this is a new vision. We'll propose to leverage Earth-scale network IPGA devices to achieve the mega brain goal, right? If successful, we can enable intelligent IoT devices, systems, like robots or wearable device to interact with us just like very naturally, right, because there's a brain behind it, right? So of course, this vision is quite ambitious because biologists still kind of struggle to understand how the brain works, right? So yeah, for a specific task like AlphaGo, machine can do very well, But how about other things? How about emotion? How about creativity and all that, right? So there is no algorithm to really go behind it yet, right? But from the design, from the kind of overall challenge point of view, right? So there are quite some challenges, right? Even with the recent advances in Hello Synthesis, difficult to compile a piece of Hello code all the way to IPGA, but also critical need for domain-specific application level optimization in machine learning. And then how about the reliability, congestion, and unpredictability in the network, and then deliver the low latency solution, right? That require both fast network infrastructure and the computation. So we propose several directions, right? Optimize the machine learning library. So the work we did for RRCN is along this way. We come up with some high-level synthesis IPs, right? And then domain-specific programming for many IPGA systems. So it's not focusing on one IPGA, it's for many IPGA. And then also how to build resilient, reliable IPGA network and eventually brings inspired IPGA fabric. Okay. So in conclusion, right, so there are many aspects of cognitive computing, right, from system building, algorithms, machine learning, acceleration, right, et cetera, et cetera. And then we demonstrate that Hello Synthesis can be an effective method for mapping machine learning to IPGAs. And then we spend quite some time talk about system level code design for heterogeneous computing. And then we mentioned about FCUDA and the new version of MegaBrain. And I think, I hope you guys are convinced that we are in an exciting era of AI, right? So let's work on it. So I would like to acknowledge my collaborators, both students, software engineers, and some faculty, and some funding agency. Okay, so thank you for your attention. I would happy to answer questions. Okay. All right.
So we do have a couple of minutes for questions, if anyone is interested. Actually, I had a question about sort of your FCUDA work.
Yeah.
Quite often, the types of processing that you would do in a GPU, because they have so many small threads, the capability of handling so many small threads, versus what you would build ideally for an FPGA would be different. Right. Maybe a smaller number of larger threads.
That's right, yes.
What is your feeling about that?
Oh, yeah, so that's actually a very good point. FCUDA is exactly dealing with that. So, in GPU, it's a single thread, multiple data, right? So what we do is we replicate those threads. So you have a logic thread, right, working on different data, let's say in a thread block, right? So then what we do is we wrap around those threads and convert them into a heavy duty threads, okay? And then we work with the heavy duty thread. First of all, we actually explore that design space there also, like a concurrency, right, and we even do memory partition, and we can do multi-issue kind of customized core and pick the best, right? So effectively, it convert from this fine-grained GPU computing model into a customized core for IPGA, right? So the FCUDA is basically capture the functionality through the CUDA implementation, then convert it into a model where we can handle for IPGA. Yeah.
Does FCUDA then support the ability to split the workload similar to what you were talking before between both an FPGA and a GPU at the same time? So take certain parts of a workload and break them off to an FPGA and certain parts and give them to a GPU, or is it only one or the other?
Right now it's only one of the other. Okay. However, that's actually a very good point. It really depends on the application itself. If certain applications Of course, if you are talking about different applications, then it's natural to, okay, this application go to GPU, this application to go to FPGA. But you are talking about within a single application, maybe some part running on GPU. So then it really depending on how this application is basically
structured,
right? So for example, for the LRCN, right? So if we want, we have the image coming, if we do some decoding, right? Maybe that's suitable for one type of platform. And then after that, you push through to the deep neural network that's suitable for a different type of application. If you have these clear faces, then it can make sense to do this kind of study. Because then you have to deal with the communication across the GPU and FPGA. I think the OpenCAPI, that system can become useful in that scenario because they are trying to build this common interface where this GPU, FPGA, they can communicate even through the common memory and using virtual addressing. Then this kind of study will become very relevant.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
So I also have a question.
Yeah.
You're basically taking non-synthesizable C and creating synthesizable system C.
Right.
That seems like magic. Could you talk just a little bit about sort of...
For those benchmarks we dealt with, we didn't really run into very sophisticated non-synthesizable code. However, in general, we can do some pre-processing, right? For example, for linked list or dynamic memory allocation, we can, try to analyze what's the maximum requirement, right? Just convert it into static, right? And something, but if it's very sophisticated, we cannot really do that yet, right? So it's a initial kind of study. However, we are thinking to open source this whole thing also, this hardware software co-design. It's sponsored by Intel. It's a 3-year project, right? With the software modeling, hardware modeling, and co-design, the whole thing, we plan to open source during DAC. Right, and then people are more than welcome to download and add additional features on top of that framework. Yeah.
If there aren't any other questions, why don't we thank our speaker one more time?
Okay. Thank you very much. Yeah.